The other morning, I went to wake up my daughters for school in the morning. Lainey got up a little bit easier than Eowyn. She was on the floor. Eowyn, I picked her up, got her off of her bunk, and she immediately crawled into her sister's bunk, the bottom bunk. When I began to pester her, she kicked me in the butt. I turned to Elena. I said, "Elena, Eowyn kicked me in the butt." And Elena sneered. And I said, "Elena, avenge me." She looked at me with her sneer. I said, "Get her." She looked at her sister, scowled, pulled back her arm, and then punched me in the crotch. Hello, everyone. Welcome once again, or welcome back rather, to the Mopod Podcast. I have been absent for the last 2 weeks. I do apologize. I can offer no reasonable or suitable excuse for my absence except to say, sorry, I just wasn't here. Last week was full of hectic events. Work was kind of crazy. I was once again fighting illness again, and between the new play that I am now in rehearsals for, and volunteer schedules and work, I just could not find time to squeeze in a podcast last week, and I do apologize. I know some of you are probably saying, "Well, you had all weekend. Why didn't you do that?" Well, soccer is still going on, so I had soccer all morning, and then I had a wedding Saturday afternoon that I was bartending for, and I thought it was a little bit more pertinent to take a nap and rest up so that I would not be worthless as tits on a bull, as it were. Sunday, I didn't get it done because I was worthless as tits on a bull. We'll just leave it at that. Oh, gosh, what's all been happening in the world? One of the big news events of the past 2 weeks was the passing of Mr. Steve Jobs, the Wunderkind behind, of course, Apple products, the Mac, the Macintosh computers, the iPod, the iPads, which, of course, you've heard me mention time and time again. I have had several iPods over the last 5 years, and a lot of my fellow podcasters in the world are paying homage to Mr. Jobs and recently because if it weren't for the revolutions that he made with audio technology as far as the iPods, the iPads, and of course iTunes, podcasters probably would not have the type of popularity that they have. I don't mean me personally, because my podcast isn't that popular, but there are some very popular ones out there. And of course, ironically, his passing came right around the same time of the release of the new iPhone, the iPhone 4S. And God, I don't need one, but I want one. For no practical reason at all, I want the new iPhone. Don't need it. I have an Android. I love my Android. And plus, I still have over a year left in my contract, so I probably can't get an iPhone, but God, I want one. But I'm just a gadget geek. I love getting new gadgets, new toys to play with. I want a Kindle. I don't necessarily need a Kindle, but gosh, I'd like a Kindle. And they lower the prices on Kindles. Oh, what's that? A Kindle? Has Mo said something about a Kindle before? I think he has. But God, I want a Kindle. They lowered the price down to, what, $79 now for a basic Kindle. And God, I would love that. They're portable. They're handy. I could read it anywhere. But at the same time, I know me. I've met me. I feel this compulsion when I get an electronic device that I need to fill up the memory. Like with my first iPod, which was 5 years ago. Got it for my birthday. It was a 60 gig iPod, which at that time was a pretty big iPod. Now the basic standard, the basic classic iPod, I think is 120 gigs. I got one of those too. But I felt this compulsion, this need to fill up every tiny megabyte of memory with whatever senseless drivel I could. And it was a video iPod, so I was finding programs to rip movies. I was putting as many movies on there as I could. Any CD I could find around my house, I would rip and put in. And then, 2 months later, a crappy song would come up on my iPod, and I'd be looking at it going, what in the hell is this shit? Joss Stone? I don't need to listen to Joss Stone. The Grease soundtrack? Who the hell put the Grease soundtrack on here? Moulin Rouge? What's going on here? And I just know that I would end up doing the same thing if I bought a Kindle. I would just buy books compulsively. Download books just for the sake of having them. Books I would never plan on reading. My house is already stockpiled with books that I have never read, that I have every intention of reading, but oh, look, it's on sale. I've got to buy it now. I have started and restarted reading The Once and Future King, the Arthur legend, 10 times in the last 3 years. Because I bought it because for the sole reason that it was on sale. I was already reading a book at the time, but oh, look, it's on sale. It's the Arthur legend. I love the Arthur legend. Give it to me now. And I get 100 pages in, and then for whatever reason, I stop reading it, start reading something else. A new Spencer novel would come out. So I'd feel compelled to buy that. My house is already full of books I don't read. Why do I need to spend money? And I would end up spending a ton of money on books that I'm not going to read. I would download magazines that I never read. I've got magazines coming to my house now that I don't read. And all because I am wasteful. I am a wasteful American. But if I do go Kindle and I switch all those subscriptions to the e-form, then they're coming to my house and I'm not getting the mail, that means I'm going green, right? Therefore, getting a Kindle would be me reducing my carbon footprint. Therefore, I need to convince my wife that me getting an iPad or a Kindle to reduce the magazines and books coming to the house is me reducing my carbon footprint. I can save the world by having an iPad. Yeah, I don't think she'll go for it either. But one thing I can tell you that she does go for is smooth, jazzy tones of the Kyle Ashe Orchestra. Or the Kyle Ashe Trio, rather. Well, damn it, the man deserves an orchestra. Once again, for those of you that don't know, this track is called The Best Thing For You. It is off of Kyle Ashe's first album, called The Hookup, which you can find at Amazon.com. Another great thing about Amazon.com, I sold 2 books there. Just in the last couple weeks, I've gotten lax. I finally went and checked my sales reports for the titles I have for sale through the Kindle service. Some people bought a copy of Our Own Devils, which I've been reading to you these last few months, as well as Time With His Fools, my bar book, which I will probably end up reading here in a couple of months once I complete reading this particular book. And if you would like your own copy of Our Own Devils or Time With His Fools, you can go to Amazon.com and purchase them to listen to, to read, rather, on your Kindle or your iPod or your Mac or your PC. And I would love it if you would go ahead and pick up a copy of Mr. Ashy's two albums. I would love for that to happen. And also, then, if you are getting sick of hearing the same two Kyle Ashy tunes every week, you could drop me a line at mopod@live.com and then suggest two different Kyle Ashy trio songs to be played. Yeah, those are the stipulations. If you want to hear new music on the Mopod, you have to choose from the two Kyle Ashy albums. So I guess you're going to have to go and download those bad boys, aren't you? Please do. I would love it. I would consider it a personal favor. A mitzvah, if you will, for my Yiddish friends. I don't think I have any Yiddish friends. I flirted with a girl once who was Jewish. I don't know if that really counts, though. Huh. Anyway, back to business. To get back into the Our Own Devil's Mix, we are up to Chapter 20 in Our Own Devil's. And for those of you who have gotten absent-minded and forgot what's all been going on, Mac has built up a very tenuous relationship with Alex's new boyfriend, Tashawn, and they have questioned the man who employed her as a waitress at a strip club. Mac threatened him with an unloaded weapon and scared the hell out of Tashawn as well as the bar owner, and then Mac threw all of Tashawn's pot that he had on him out the window. That probably did not go over very well. What happens next? Well, let's find out. We'll pick it up right now with Chapter 20 of Our Own Devils. "Why do people call you Mac?" Tashawn asked once we were close to Lincoln. "Why do people call you Tashawn? I asked you first." "I don't really give a shit," I said. He nodded and seemed to let it go for a while. His curiosity must have gotten the better of him, though, because it wasn't much later he answered me. "I hate the name Francis," he said. "Ever since I was a little kid, man, Francis just isn't a man's name. You know what I'm saying? It's your 80-year-old aunt's name. So when I got older, I changed it." "Why Tashawn, though?" "I'm a baseball fan," he said with a shrug. "I was like Sean Dunstan when he played for Chicago, so there you go." "But why the T in front of it?" "It's distinctive," he said with a grin. It was growing dark out. The city lights shone brightly into the distance as we approached the turn off to Tashawn Street. Earlier, the state capitol building had shone brightly in the distance. Now it was all but eclipsed by the lights of Memorial Stadium. I wondered how many people in Nebraska had been to Husker football games but had never been inside the capitol. "What about you? Why Mac?" "Alex told you about that, huh?" "She just mentioned it a couple of times. She never said where the name came from." I chuckled weakly. "Probably because I never told her," I said. "Why, some old lady of yours give you that name to your dick or something?" He was laughing at his cleverness. "No," I said with a faint smile. When my younger brother was learning to talk, he had problems saying my name. No matter how much my parents worked with him on it, he just couldn't say Malcolm. It always came out Mac'em. Every damn time. Somewhere along the line, it became Mac, and it just kind of stuck. Tashawn smiled. "That's a cool story, dude. You should tell some honeys that story. Maybe they'd help you lighten up a little bit, you know what I'm saying?" "When did your brother finally get the name right?" I swallowed hard. "He never did," I said. "He fell off some playground equipment and hit his head. He died."
"Oh, shit, man. I'm sorry."
"It's okay." We were in front of his house now with the car still in gear, my foot on the brake and the engine still running. There was now an awkward silence between the two of us. The only sound in the car was the idling engine and the radio turned down low. "So, what's next?" he said finally. His voice was somewhat shaky with embarrassment. You get out of the car, and I go back to Omaha for the night. Yeah, I got that part. I mean, what do we do tomorrow? I guess it's time to really piss in the pot. We go talk to Russell Applegate. That lawyer dude? Yeah, I said slowly after taking a deep breath. What, you don't want to talk to the guy? Ideally, I don't want to have to talk to anybody. It'd be nice if someone would just walk up to me and say, hey, I did it. Here's the baseball bat I used. Take me to jail. But that's not how it works. It's just that this lawyer and I have already met, and he's got a hard-on for me. I'm guessing you don't think he thinks you're cute and want to hold your hand? Not exactly, no. Deshaun chuckled quietly to himself. You ever have any quiet days? Days where I stay home drunk are usually pretty calm, I said. He nodded without saying anything as he opened the door and started to get out. He paused and sat back down. Got my gun back? I thought about it. Deshaun was kind of pissed off at me for scaring the shit out of his boss and for throwing out however many dollars worth of pot and related material. Did I really want to give him a gun? Of course, I did have a gun of my own, and judging from his style of shooting earlier in the day, I was guessing I was a better shot than he was. Sure, I said as I pulled the empty Glock from my back waistband. Deshaun was visibly surprised I was giving it back, and more so when I pulled out a few facial tissues from the center console and wiped the entire gun down, holding it by the trigger guard through my jacket sleeve. You still don't trust me, do you? Not 100%, no. You trust me? Not yet. Well, there you go, I said. Ever since my untimely departure from the Omaha Police Department, I'd been a little paranoid. Actually, Alex had called it paranoia. I preferred to call it being cautious. Whatever it was what had me keep a loaded weapon either handy in my apartment or on my hip. It also had me keep track of who was in my rearview mirror when I drove. Most of the time, I would rationalize why some cars in my mirror looked familiar or why someone would still be driving behind me after having traveled so far. It's also very easy to dismiss suspicion or paranoia when driving at night and cars behind you are mostly just reflected headlights. Still, I had the distinct feeling as I drove from Deshaun's house to my on-ramp for Interstate 80 that I was being followed. There was no way for me to figure out what the car was giving that was without giving up the advantage that I knew, or at least suspected, that I was being followed. The street lamps we would drive under were of little or no help to figure out the make and model of the car. All I had was a possibly oversensitive instinct telling me the car was two or three vehicles behind me was following me. I was on the interstate and eastbound to Omaha with the sinking suspicion still haunting me before I had an idea. I had just cleared the Lincoln City limits near Waverly when I let my foot off of the gas, turned on my hazard lights, and drifted off to the left shoulder. Cars and diesel semi-trucks moved over into the left lane and passed me by, some of them honking their displeasure with me as they passed. I took mental note of each vehicle as it passed while I got out of my car and walked around it, kicking a few of the tires to sell the illusion that I was checking to see if there was something wrong with my car. No one stopped or even slowed down as they passed me, and no one suddenly turned around after they'd passed. It wasn't until I passed a rest stop near Mahoney State Park that I felt at least a little validated. A silver four-door Pontiac Grand Prix had been sitting near the on-ramp a little too long, it seemed, waiting to pull onto the interstate until after I'd passed by. It then sprang forward, accelerating conspicuously too fast to try and catch up with me. Tailing a car, for me anyway, was never all that easy, and I still often had problems doing it. I was certain that it had to be worse when you're an idiot. My feelings of paranoia were now replaced with a sense of uncertainty. I had absolutely no idea what to do. If I let on that I knew I was being followed, my shadow could maybe be spooked and take off, and it would profit me nothing. Then again, if I did nothing and let my shadow do whatever, I was maybe setting myself up for whatever. Different possibilities ran through my head. I thought of pulling a bullet and going all Steve McQueen on my shadow, trying to pull a reversal. But I figured I wasn't smart enough or talented enough a driver to pull it off. And if I pulled onto the shoulder a second time, I'd be showing my hand. I had thought about calling Trey or Mike to shadow my shadow, but I was still a bit away from Omaha, and to have to wait for one of them, no, I was going to have to do something on my own. It had worked once before, so I decided to feign car troubles once again. I pulled off of the interstate completely at the Gretna exit and drove nearly half of the distance to the small burg, my silver shadow still in tow. To try and add a little credibility to my ruse, I turned off the ignition before I started to come to a stop. The power steering died and made maneuvering to the shoulder a little difficult. The next couple of steps were tricky and had to be done quickly. I needed to be out of the car and have the hood up quickly before my shadow closed in on me. I did both and accomplished it without looking like I was running. At best, I was hoping for the silver sedan to pass and that I'd catch the car's license plate number. At worst, my shadow would pull over too, which he did. I got the hood opened and used it to cover as cover to draw my .45, which I held in my left hand and tried to hide in the dark caverns of the engine. The Pontiac's headlights were blinding, probably set on the high beams. I was even happier that I'd opened the hood. Without it, I'd have been completely blinded. I barely looked around the edge of the hood, just enough to see that someone was coming. I controlled the urge to immediately come around with my gun up and risk being blinded. I waited. The driver of the Pontiac was big, much bigger than I was. He stood about 6'3" and was obviously big into lifting weights. He was huge, really. I was glad I had a gun. He walked up along the driver's side of my car and stood there, barely in view, making sure that if I wanted to get a good look at him, I'd have to step around into the light. "Having problems?" he said. He was cheerful, casual. My knees quivered with adrenaline. "Yeah," I said after swallowing hard. It was difficult to try and sound as casual as he did. "The damn thing just up and died on me, can you believe it? Ever have problems with it before?" "Not before today," I said, forcing a chuckle. I was trying to come off as embarrassed and not being mechanically inclined. The second part was easy. "This thing's been kind of acting up ever since I left Lincoln, coughing and sputtering and what have you. I have no idea what the hell might be wrong with it. You know anything about engines?"
"I know some."
"Would you mind taking a look at it?" My shadow slowly stepped around the front of the car, and I could tell he had something in his hand. Fortunately, so did I. I backed up from the car quickly and raised my gun, being careful to stay in the cover of my hood's shadow. My good Samaritan was now just a silhouette holding what looked like a tire iron, and I pointed at its center. Rock beats scissors, gun sure as hell beats tire iron. "Drop it," I said, switching the .45 to my right hand. "If you're going to be ready to be shooting at someone, it's best to be able to hit him." The silhouette hesitated, the tire iron almost bouncing in his hand. "Do it or I'll blow your fucking head off." I could faintly tell that he was shaking his head slightly, probably with disbelief that the prey had trapped the hunter. I was more than just a little surprised about it myself. The tire iron fell to the asphalt with a satisfying clank. "Good. Step around to the front of the car and lay down on the ground." He slowly and begrudgingly walked to the front of the car and lay down on his back. "Roll over onto your stomach, dammit, and put your hands on top of your head." He sighed audibly with frustration, but he did it. "Good boy," I said. With my heart pounding in my ears, I walked up to the front of my car and turned around, carefully walking backwards to pick up the tire iron. I held it with my left hand and then backed up to the silver Pontiac. With an almost evil grin on my face, I smashed each headlight with the tire iron and then tossed it away into an empty cornfield. He'd be able to find it, but it would take him a while. "So, how you doing?" I said as I walked back to the front of my car. He was gone. I stepped around quickly to the passenger side and found him. Sort of. I hadn't been thinking when I walked around and did it too close to the car, making it kind of easy for the man to dive out and tackle me about mid-thigh. I landed on the asphalt hard, a shockwave of pain riding the length of my spine. I wasn't sure, but I had a feeling that I bruised my tailbone. At least I hadn't dropped my gun. The tackle was good. He'd wrapped me up completely and held on till we were both on the ground. In that respect, he'd kind of messed up, because his head hit the road at almost the same time as my ass. This left him feeling a little stunned and gave me a chance to roll away and sit up. It felt and probably looked awkward, but it was enough to have my gun up and pointed at my new friend. We were now on the dirt shoulder of the highway and looked it. My clothes and hands were filthy, and my shadow had a lot of dirt and gravel stuck to his face. He was between me and my car, so once again, he had the luxury of being just a silhouette. The only physical feature I could make out on him was that he had a short mullet. "Try to do that again, and I will shoot you," I said, breathing hard. My entire head hurt. I wondered if I hadn't hit the back of my head on the ground when I was tackled. I stood up slowly, keeping my gun leveled on the shadow. He didn't move. "I may not be able to see you completely, but I can sure as fuck put a bullet into a dark mass. Who sent you?" "No one sent me. I just thought you needed some help. That's why you were carrying a tire iron? You can't be too careful. What's your name?" No reply. "Pull out your wallet," I said. He smiled faintly. "Not carrying one." I ordered him to lie down flat on his belly again and stood over him. I could tell he wasn't carrying a wallet. I could have gone into his car and pulled out the registration, but it would have left me open to another tackle. The guy didn't seem to have a lot of fear, so the gun itself was not enough of a deterrent to get him not to do anything. While still standing over him, I carefully patted him down with my foot. He didn't have anything. "All right, here's what I want you to do, friend," I said as I took a few steps away from him. "I want you to stand up slowly and walk to that cornfield about 300 yards. Stand up too fast, and I'll shoot you. Try to turn around, and I'll shoot you. Basically, if you do anything I don't like, I'll shoot you. Got it?" He nodded. "Good. Let's try it." He stood up slowly, just as I'd ordered, and even took the time to dust his clothes off a little bit. He tried to turn and look at me over his shoulder until I made a "nuh-uh-uh" sound. He took a deep breath and turned his head so that his neck made a few cracking sounds. He started to walk towards the general direction of where I'd thrown the tire iron. "Nice try, friend." He stopped and chuckled to himself softly. "Try the other side of the highway." He nodded as he turned and started walking the other way. Once he was in the middle of the cornfield, I finally relaxed a little bit. I kept my gun leveled at him, but I wasn't aiming exactly. Keeping my eyes locked on him, I carefully stepped over to the Pontiac, and with my eyes still mostly fixed on him, I blew out the driver's side front tire. The muzzle blast was startling and blinding in the darkness. I could tell my new friend jumped at the gunshot. The driver took a few steps forward, and I leveled my gun back at him. He probably couldn't see me distinctively, but he obviously knew what I'd done because he stopped. Without saying anything or taking my eyes or gun off him, I walked back to my car, got in, and drove away. Well, there's some good old excitement for you podcast listeners. Once again, I do apologize for my absence, and this is a bit of a short chapter, but I'm going to make it up to you kids. I swears it. Coming up here in the next few weeks, it will be another special OPOD episode. My wife, Amanda, who some of you may or may not know, she is going through an English class for her elementary education degree, and for her final project she needs to do a type of symposium, a composite, some sort of wrap-up for her classwork, and they can do it in any format they wish, and so she asked if she could be a quote-unquote guest for the podcast. So we're going to talk about books and reading, and talk about her experiences going back to school as a young woman in her early 30s going back to school. So once again, if you have any suggestions, questions, comments, drop me a line at mopod@live.com. Please go to Facebook and become a fan of the Mopod podcast there. Keep downloading, and please go to Amazon.com, look for Matthew Mosman, and purchase the books to read in full at your leisure. Thanks again. I promise I will be better about making the weekly contribution here to the podcast. I feel so insanely guilty about skipping last week, even though that's the only week I've missed since I started doing this back in March or April. But I feel I have an obligation to you, my 6 loyal listeners. All right, thanks everyone. I'll see you next time.